It's wonderful to be here this afternoon, to be able to participate in this incredible event. And you shouldn't be misled by the title of the topic. The topic of donations and deception shouldn't be taken to imply that there are any deceptions involved in today's fundraising. If anything, it's an expression of confidence that we are fundraising today with total confidence in our cause and in our source. And this is actually a topic in our Limud this year, in Maseches Bava Basra. We learned about the importance of fundraisers, about the notion not only of tzedakah, but of those who would raise tzedakah, about the gaboi tzedakah, about those who involve themselves in distributing tzedakah and in bringing it about in the first place. And the Gemara tells us that gadol hama'asa yoser min ha'osa, that one who gets others to do mitzvos, in this case to give tzedakah, are considered even greater than those who give tzedakah themselves. It's a fascinating concept, and to try to understand why that is worth exploring, but that's not our subject today. But the importance of getting others to give tzedakah is a fascinating idea. And the topic that I'd like to talk about today, the idea of making sure that we do so with complete honesty, is a crucially important topic, because it forces us to make sure that two of our core values are perfectly in balance. And it's not an easy thing, because on the one hand, here at tzedakah, this crucial Jewish value, to make sure that we are maximizing the donations to tzedakah, both those that we give ourselves and those that we bring about, in the sense of gadol hama'asa yoser min ha'osa. But the crucial value of honesty, that chosamto shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu emes, that God's seal is truth, and that we need to make sure that everything that we do is happening only through honest means. And therefore, to make sure that all of this is in perfect balance is a crucial mission. And therefore, this sugya, I feel, forces us to really make sure that our values are in balance. And there isn't really much margin for error, because we don't want to skimp on the tzedakah. We know that making others donate, that the efforts that we bring towards fundraising are crucial. Apparently 95% of all donations happen because of solicitations, so the impact that we can have on others through fundraising is very vital. So any skimping on the effort could have a tremendous impact. And yet, if we do so with any degree of dishonesty, so then we're doing something very false to our values, and we are skimping on a crucial core component of who we are. And we know that we're not allowed to steal for the purpose of tzedakah, and we're not allowed to lie for the purpose of tzedakah. So certainly in the major ways, we know for sure that that is off the table. And the same Gemara in Bava Basra that tells us on that same daf, that tells us just how valuable the role of fundraising is, that Gemara also tells us that we'll be called to account for any inappropriate fundraising we do. It's really kind of a pressure cooker, that at the same time as we're being asked to raise funds, we're also being told that any money that we raise inappropriately, we're also going to be held accountable for. So, for example, if we pressure somebody to give something that they're not capable of giving, perhaps because we embarrass them, perhaps because we ask them in public and they feel like they have to give when they're not ready to give, or because we say something that's not true and they give under false impressions. So that's something that we're going to be held accountable for. So I'd like to explore a little bit some of the sources that are involved in showing just how particular our honesty has to be, and just how specific our standards have to be. And it's really a fascinating discussion, and I think the sources and the debate that surrounds some of the sources highlight just how careful we have to be to make sure that we really have that balance perfectly struck. And we know that we certainly can't falsify a tzedakah. Certainly, obviously, if we claim something is a tzedakah when it isn't, so that's the worst type of misrepresentation. If we're going to pretend that we're collecting for a tzedakah and we're collecting for something else, so nobody would think that's okay. That's not only theft, that's not only fraud, but it exploits one's generosity, it exploits one's sense of chesed, and clearly that's wrong. But sometimes one has the impression that if I am pursuing the cause of Staka. If I have a good cause in mind, and I'm trying to collect for something l'shem shamayim, I'm trying to collect for a good cause, so then the ends justify the means. And I could say something that's not true, and we're told chalila that's not the case. We can't lie even for a good cause. So for example, if I believe in what I'm collecting for and I think that if I use a more popular sounding cause, then I'll get more, so there's no question I'm not allowed to do that. So some of the svarim talk about that if I'm trying to collect for a yeshiva, but I think it's going to sound more popular if I say I'm collecting for orphans to get married, so I'll say that, so this is prohibited. I'm not allowed to pretend I'm collecting for the marriage of orphans when really I'm collecting for a yeshiva. I'm not allowed to misrepresent the cause or the degree of the cause. So some examples we could think of on our own, but some that post-convention, for example, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach writes in his tshuvas that if I'm collecting for yeshiva, but I misrepresent the number of students I have, so I say it's much larger than it actually is, and therefore I'm asking for more money. So he writes, of course, that's prohibited. There's no way I'm allowed to do that. Or if I'm collecting for somebody who's ill, and I say that he needs an operation, he needs an expensive operation, he doesn't really need an expensive operation, so I'm making that up. So again, that's clearly prohibited. I can't make up needs that don't exist, even if I rationalize by saying that there are other ways in which it's a good cause anyway, so therefore I can pull on the heartstrings a little bit more by making it sound more sympathetic. There's no question that that's prohibited, and any money that I would get that way would be under false pretenses and would be essentially theft and would have to be returned to the donors because it would be taken falsely, and there's no question that's not permitted. But it goes beyond that. And the question is, what about more subtle forms of deception that we might think are not so bad and don't necessarily misrepresent the cause itself or the degree of the cause? So maybe that might be something that we could find some room for. So for example, let's say I want to pump up the donations. So I say that people are donating more than they're actually donating. Or I announce that I'm donating to a cause, and I'm not really donating as much as I claim I'm donating. Or I'm the gabbai, I'm the collector, and I announce the donations of a certain amount, and it's more than I'm actually getting. And my hope is that by presenting this cause as very popular, and people will be impressed that there's so many donations coming in, so that will start a trend, and I'll get more donations. So am I allowed to do that? So here the poskim, all for the most part, assume that that too is prohibited, and that that's something that's called gnevas das. It's not necessarily gezel, it's not fraud of the same type. That if I were to misrepresent the cause completely, that would be fraud. If I take money under totally false pretenses in general, that's fraud. And even within staka, that would also be called fraud. Gnevas das is a different type of prohibition, but it's still a prohibition. So for example, let's say in business, if I were to misrepresent an item that I'm selling and tell you it's worth more than it actually is, and I take your money under those false pretenses, or tell you it's something that it isn't, and sell it to you when you wouldn't otherwise buy it at all, or wouldn't otherwise buy it for that much. So that's fraud. That's a type of theft, a type of gezel. But let's say I sell you the item for the accurate price, but I tell you, oh, everyone's looking to buy this. This is the most popular item. Or I tell you, this is the last one I have. And it's not really the last one I have. It's not really the most popular item. It's not really something everybody is coming in to get. It's not really on sale right now. It's not really about to fly off the shelves. So that's called gnevas das. That's misrepresentation. It's getting people into the store under false pretenses. It's getting people to think that this is an attractive item with falsehood. And that's also prohibited. It doesn't necessarily invalidate the sale. It doesn't necessarily mean that I have to return the money afterwards. But it's considered to be misrepresentational. It's considered to be dishonest. And that is usur. So what about when it comes to tzedakah? So if I would say that, oh, I'm getting all kinds of donations, there's so much money coming in for this tzedakah, and it's not true. So can I justify and say it's for a good cause? So therefore, I should be allowed to do that? So this is something the poskim discussed, and the most quoted source against this was the Tshuvas Minchas Yitzchak. The Minchas Yitzchak was written by Dayan Weiss, first of Manchester, England, and he made reference to a Gemara in Sukkah. It's the first source here on your source sheet, source number one, the Gemara in Sukkah, on Daf Kof Tetzim at Aleph here. Gemara talks about various averos, various shortcomings of the Jewish people that cause problems. And if you see here the last two lines of the source, it says, "Ubishvil arba dvarim nichse balebatim nimsarim l'malchus." Because of four things, the property of homeowners gets turned over to the royalty, gets taken away, and it lists various things: mishahi shtarus purim, people who keep around contracts that have already been paid, debts that have already been paid, amalbe beribis, people who lend money with interest, people who could have protested bad behavior and didn't. And here, this last one, that's the significant one. What do? They announce donations in public and they don't actually give. And that, perhaps, is relevant, says the Minchas Yitzchak, to this case. He and a few others, Rav Moshe Sterbach, a number of other poskim, they believe that this is exactly what we're talking about. That they announce donations. Why? In order to spur greater donations. Yes, they'll say they're giving a lot of money, and this will convince other people to also do the same. And they're saying this not just on their own, but because of the Maharsha. The Maharsha in source number two explains it that way. It says, the leaders of the congregation, poskim tztaka meruba, they announce that they're giving a lot of tztaka, ve'ena nosdin kula, they don't give that much. Sha'omrim shlohaya daitim lakach, they didn't really intend to give that much. Ela b'shvil acherim sheyitnu nedavos karoi, they wanted other people to give as much as they could give, so therefore they announced a higher amount in order to inspire greater donations. So this source is quoted again by the Minchas Yitzchak, by Moshe Sternbach, and a few others. And it's interesting because, especially without the Maharsha, or maybe even with the Maharsha, it's interesting to use this as a conclusive source, because one could have suggested that the Gemara is talking about other problems. Because the truth is, when the Gemara cites this as a terrible issue, these postgate stalka barabim, these people who announce these donations that they don't actually end up paying, or they don't end up totally paying, you could argue there are at least three problems here. And we're not 100% sure which one is being highlighted as the main issue. What are the three problems? Well, first of all, maybe there's another issue here. You're making a commitment to tzedakah, and you're not following through. And that's itself a problem. The truth is, the Gemara says that tzedakah is binding even b'machshava. Even if one has a mental commitment to give tzedakah, it's obligatory. So certainly if one makes a public declaration, it would seem like that's obligatory on them, and if they're not coming through, that would seem to be a big problem. So that could be the issue. And in addition to that, there's another Geneva Stas issue here, that in addition to the question of whether this is a sufficient justification for tzedakah purposes, what about the Geneva Stas of the individual? The person who's claiming that he's going to give this tzedakah and he's not, he's also showing off under false pretenses. He's claiming that he's a big Baal tzedakah. He's telling everybody that he's giving this much, and the truth is he's not. So he's going to get credit. He's going to look like he's a big nadvan, and the truth is it's all a lie. It's all a misrepresentation. So maybe that's why he's being criticized. Maybe that's why it's so terrible. And yes, the fact that he's pumping up donations under false pretenses, so that also is a problem. But how do we know which one it is that the Gemara is so upset about? And the truth is, out of the three, the last one is the most justifiable. The last one has the best excuse. The fact that he's doing it in order to spur extra donations for tzedakah, if that's the reason, so you could say that's the least problematic of the three. So it's interesting to bring this as a proof. And there is some discussion about just how strong this proof is. So among the analysis that you find here is just how much of the first two problems. So first of all, as far as the neder, so is it really an issue when it comes to a neder? So yes, theoretically it should be, but what if this was worked out in advance with the gabbai? So if the individual who's making this donation, if he's in cahoots with the tzedakah, if they made a deal, let's say they asked him to do it, they said they went to the rich people and they said, listen, we know you're not planning on giving this much, but if you would make a big public announcement, we'd really appreciate it because it'll spur others, we'd like to list you, and that will help us. So does that make a difference? And we'll release you from any obligation. We're not going to insist on the collection. We're not going to make it a nether. So does that address the nether problem? This is something that Rav Moshe Sternbuch talks about in his Shuvos. This is something that some of the other poskim talk about. Is it possible to account for the nether issue? The Dvar Yehoshua was a great posek from Tel Aviv, right, Dayan from Tel Aviv. So he thought that a proof that the Gemara was not focused on the nether issue, he also talks about that at length, he thought a proof that the Gemara was not so addressing that issue is the fact that it emphasizes Barabbin. The point is this was done in public. So why do we have to talk about that if the issue is the nether? So then even if they said it in private, it would also be a concern. So the fact that we're highlighting the rabbin, that's to show you that that's what we're talking about. This is being done in public in order to try to get other people to give, and you're fooling those people, and that's the problem. So it's interesting because there is what to debate about this. There is also still the Gneivas Das that the donor is showing off like he's a big donor, like he's the one who's a big tzaddik here, when really he's not planning on actually giving, and maybe that should be a problem. But the truth is maybe that's actually less of a problem because whatever credit he gives doesn't necessarily hurt other people. But the idea that you may be soliciting donations under false pretenses, maybe that's being identified as the more damaging issue here. And that's what these poskim seem to see as the primary impact of this Gemara. It's interesting. It should be highlighted that this is not a victimless crime, that even though it seems like it's for a good cause, but you are presumably causing a loss to some other tzedakah, that once you're addressing the conscience of Bali tzedakah, once you're tapping into those who are already looking to be generous and they're looking to see what causes are getting the most donations, and you're going to falsely represent your tzedakah as getting a lot of donations, so it's presumably coming at the expense of some other tzedakah that may have already earned more respect from others. So this is not a victimless crime, and the idea that this is an illegitimate way to get more donations to come to your cause is significant, and it could be, and it likely is, that many of the poskim who addressed this understood intuitively that this is a problem, and the raya is maybe secondary. The fact that this Gemara also references this, and this could have a couple of issues with it, but the fact that the Gemara talks about this together with the fact that there was an intuitive understanding that this is not a victimless crime and that this has consequences is perhaps what a lot of these poskim were tapping into. Now, what's also interesting, and this was also the subject of discussion, is the Minchas Yitzchak also brings a second proof. And there was some debate that circled around this also. This is source number 6, and we'll just summarize it. It's a fascinating Gemara in the Yerushalmi that appears in a number of places, just to say it a little bit inside and a little bit outside. The Gemara tells a story, Tani Shalosh Meirish Nazirin, Alu b'meir Rav Shimon ben Shetach, that there was a situation in the days of Rav Shimon ben Shetach that there were 300 Nazirin who had to bring their korbanos. And apparently they couldn't afford their korbanos, so they needed charitable help, they needed tzedakah assistance in order to pay for their korbanos. So how are they going to do this? So first, Shimon ben Shetach tried to help them. He tried to undo their Nazirus with his lumdus. He tried to find a Pesach. So for about half of them, he was able to do that. Meya v'chamishim matzalehem Pesach. So for 150 of them, he was able to find a reason why they weren't obligated. They were able to undo their Nazirus. But for meya v'chamishim lo matzalehem Pesach. For 150, he didn't find. So he still had to figure out how to help out the other 150. So what did he do? Asa gaba yane malka. He went to the king, Yanai, and he said to him, Amale, is hacha tlas mei nazirin? There are 300 nazirin, the whole group. Bayin teisha mei karbanin. We need a total of 900 karbanas. So what should we do? Let's split it. Ela yayiv at palgam in didach, v'ana palgam in didi. You take care of half, and I'll take care of half. So that was the deal.
And the Rishalmi goes on to say that the king sent half, Shalach le'arba me'avachamsh, he sent 450 karbanos, and then he heard that apparently Shimon ben Shetach didn't pay for anything. So, Gemara goes on to say, just to say it outside, that he got mad when he heard that Shimon ben Shetach didn't pay for anything, and Shimon ben Shetach heard that the king got mad, so he ran away. And then eventually circumstances happened that he got brought back to him. And just to skip to the end in the interest of time, so you hear about three lines from the end. When he gets brought back to him, he says, Amale lama flayasbi. He said, why did you fool me? You told me you were going to take care of half, and apparently you didn't. So Amale laya flayasbach, I didn't fool you. At mimamoncha vana minoraisi. You took care of half with your money. And I took care of half with my Torah. I did what I said I was going to do. I took care of half and you took care of half. The pasuk in Koheles, ki b'tzeil ha'chacham or b'tzeil ha'kesef. So some with the Torah, some with their wisdom, some with the money. They both work. So I did what I was going to do. You did what you were going to do. It's all good. So I'm like, okay, v'lam barakta. He said, all right, so you have an answer, so why'd you run away? So he says, well, I heard you were mad at me, and I know you need a little bit of time to cool off before I could explain it to you, and that's good advice, not to try to deal with people who are angry. So that was the story. So it's interesting that Menachas Yitzchak brings this also as proof. And there's some debate about whether this is a good proof or not such a good proof. So the Menachas Yitzchak's point, which was debated, was that you see that Shimon ben Shetach was only able to do this because he had this explanation, because he did indeed take care of the half. On the surface, it seems like he was doing exactly what we're saying you can't do here, that basically he was pumping it up, claiming that he was doing something he wasn't doing in order to get somebody else to do their part. But the answer is that no, he wasn't actually pumping it up, because really he did do it, he just did it a different way. So that's a debate exactly how to read this story, and there was a contemporary of the Menachas Yitzchak, the Tshuvas Kinyan Torah Bahalacha, Avram David Horowitz, who said, I don't think this on the surface is such a good proof, because it seems to be an opening for anybody to say anything. Well, I had something else in mind, I had some other way of doing it, I was talking about some other tzedakah, maybe this is a proof against your position, this is a proof that you could say whatever you want, and you could have any kind of plan in mind. But then his argument isn't really an argument, because basically it's a clarification. He really ends up saying the same thing as the Menachas Yitzchak, I think, while he's arguing with him. He says, no, but the point is that because he had this specific way of addressing it, that's why he was able to do it, and that's the point of the story, that because he actually did find a solution for this half, for his half with his Torah, so that's why. But anything short of that, he wouldn't have been able to do this, and that's indeed the point, and that's the takeaway. And it's a fascinating story, and there are poskim who talk about the implications of this Gemara. There's an interesting discussion. For example, it's one sefer that discusses a pretty common scenario. Let's say sometimes you have somebody who's sick, and there are rabbanim who are trying to raise money to help them. Let's say it's a common scenario, somebody is coming in from Israel to America for medical treatment, and there are rabbis who are trying to help raise money, and they go to some of the philanthropists, and the philanthropists say, listen, I'll help, but I'm not gonna do everything, I'll take care of half of it, which is a common scenario. So they tell the philanthropists, okay, he needs $100,000, the expenses are $100,000. And the philanthropist says, okay, I'll cover half of it. So the other half, the rabbis cover, but the way they cover it, the other half is, let's say, it's the hotel expenses and the airline expenses. So the way they cover that is they get somebody who has miles, and they get somebody to put him up, and they get somebody to drive him around. So what would have been $50,000 of travel expenses and hospitality expenses, they find a way to cover that through people's contributions that don't actually require that much money. So is that permissible or not? Is that dishonest? Or is that okay? So had they said to this donor who said, I'll pay half, so had they doubled it and said, well, we need $200,000, so he'll give $100,000, that for sure would have been unacceptable. That for sure would have been false. But if what they meant was, okay, we'll take care of the other half, and they don't mean they're going to pay money, but they mean they'll use their skill set by working out whatever connections they have in order to make that actual dollar amount taken care of some other way, is that acceptable? So it could be, you could make an argument from this that is acceptable. It doesn't necessarily mean they have to write a check. So the donor's skill set is writing checks, and their skill set is getting it taken care of through other ways, through their connections. So maybe that's also legitimate. Maybe that's a proof from this Gemara that it is legitimate. So far what we have is what's both intuitive and seems to be based on sources, that we're not permitted to misrepresent for tzedakah at all, and we're not allowed to misrepresent even in a minor way, even a way that wouldn't be considered in the business world gezel, but would be considered gneivas das. Even that we're not allowed. We're not allowed to misrepresent in order to spur greater donations. So, for example, to say that we are looking for, to say that we have greater donations than we already have so that other people will follow. So even that we're not allowed to do. That's what it sounds like both logically and it sounds like from sources. So the issue is, there was much discussion because there seems to be a conflicting source. And that is a Gemara in Maseches Erechin, a brief Gemara which has prompted a lot of discussion. And that is source number 4. So here, it's a little confusing, now we're talking about Rabbi Yanai. The last Gemara, the Yerushalmi, we're talking about King Yanai, and Shimon ben Shetach. Here, Yanai is the rabbi. So source number 4, the Gemara says Rabbi Yanai, source number 3 actually, source number 4 is Rashi, source number 3 is the Gemara. It's the Gemara in Erechin, and Vav Mud Aleph, to Vav Mud Beis. So the Gemara says that in terms of a gift to tzedakah, ad shlo basli ad gabai musul shnosa, mutter shnosa, that until the money has been given to the gabai tzedakah, it can be given to some other tzedakah cause. Mishabatali ad gabai, when the money has been given to the gabai, also lishnosa, then it cannot be taken for any other tzedakah cause. And then the Gemara says, Ini, is that really true? Vahar Rabbi Yanai Yosef Upara. So Rabbi Yanai apparently would borrow from the money that was given for tzedakah, and then he would pay it back later. So the Gemara says, well, Shani Rabbi Yanai. Rabbi Yanai is a different situation. The nichaluhu la'aniyim, the kamadamashe ma'aseh u'maisaluhu. That in that case, it was actually good for the aniyim. And Rashi, source 4, Rashi explains what was going on here. That Rabbi Yanai used to borrow money from the tzedakah, money that was already given to the tzedakah. He would borrow money for his own personal use. But the Gemara says that actually was a benefit for the aniyim. Why was it a benefit for the aniyim? Because since the money was missing from the kupa, because Rav Yanai had borrowed it for his personal use, and it took him a while to pay it back, all that time that the kupa was a little bit empty, that the kupa was deficient, so people would see that, they would see that it was missing, and that it was short, and they'd feel, oh my gosh, I have to give more tzedakah, I have to donate because it's lacking. So apparently that was a good thing. People were spurred to give more money to the tzedakah kupa because Rav Yanai essentially was hiding it. He had taken it for his own use, but because he was hiding the money, so people saw it was low, they thought it was low. It wasn't really low. He was using the money for his own purposes temporarily, but that usage made it look like it was lower than it was, and therefore that ended up bringing up more money for tzedakah. So this creates, in the minds of many commentaries, somewhat of a stira, somewhat of a contradiction, because it sounds like from this Gemara that it's okay to kind of fool people for the purpose of tzedakah. It sounds like it's okay to cause a misrepresentation, to provoke the impression that there is a shortage in tzedakah so that people will give more, even though it's not really the case, even though there isn't really a shortage. So is this really what's going on, and is this really such a contradiction? So this was a big debate, and the debate was either worsened or helped by the Beis Yosef. The author of the Shulchan Aruch has a comment here that certainly muddies the waters a little bit, that either makes it a little bit harder or makes it a little bit easier, depending how you read it. Now, how you read it is going to be a little bit harder because I wasn't specific enough when I gave the sources in. I apologize. So you have this long section from the Beis Yosef, that's source 5, but it cuts off just before the relevant part. So that's because I wasn't specific enough, so I apologize. So it all depends on how you read it, then you won't be reading it. You'll have to listen to me say it over without it. So again, my apologies for that. but this Beis Yosef was perhaps a little bit shocking and highly significant to the discussion. So you'll have to trust me as to what he says. Trust me that I hopefully won't deceive you in a shir about deception, but you can look it up later. So what the Beis Yosef discusses, it's perhaps a little bit shocking the way he phrases it. It says, why Rabbi Yannai, if Rabbi Yannai wanted to spur greater donations by giving the people the impression that the kupa was short, that there wasn't enough in the charity box for the aniyim, why did he have to go to all the trouble of borrowing the money, of taking it out of the kupa? Why didn't he just announce? Why didn't he just tell people that we're short? Tell people we don't have enough. And that would have accomplished the same thing. Somewhat of a surprising question, probably. So the Beis Yosef has two answers. One answer is basically a side reason that is telling us that he needed to borrow it anyway, and this is why it was good for the aniyim, which makes it sound like apparently he could have said that. He could have made that announcement had he wanted to, which is pretty striking. And then the second answer, which gets the most attention, the language of the Beis Yosef essentially is Shelo haya rotza lahotzi sheker mipiv, that he didn't want to express a falsehood directly. He didn't want to express with his mouth something that was false. So what exactly is the message of this Beis Yosef is actually subject to a lot of discussion. There are those who take away from this Beis Yosef essentially the point that Lo Haya Rotzi, that he did not want to, he was not allowed to, that you're not allowed to misrepresent the situation. He would not be allowed to say that the fund was low. That would be unacceptable falsehood. And the truth is, the Radbaz says it more explicitly. The Rabbaz, in his commentary to the Rambam in Hilchos Matnas Aniyim, is quoted less frequently than the Beis Yosef, but the Rabbaz says it more explicitly. The Rabbaz asks the same question, and the Rabbaz says that he would not be permitted to expressly say this, and he refers to the pasuk in Tehillim, Dover Shkarim Lo Yikon Keneged Einai, that somebody who speaks lies will not remain in the presence of God. That would be unacceptable. So the Rabbaz seems to be saying it as a clear no-no, as a clear prohibition, although drawing some kind of a distinction between that which is explicit and that which is just implied. While the Beis Yosef's a little bit more mysterious here. The Beis Yosef, unclear whether he's saying it would be prohibited to say it directly, but it's okay to do it indirectly, or maybe he's saying that you could have said it directly. In the first answer, is he saying you could have said it directly? In the second answer, is he saying that you couldn't, or is it sounds more like it's kind of a personal chumrah, that he didn't want to say it overtly, but maybe he could have? So there's a lot of debate that swirls around this Beis Yosef. He's quoted kind of in opposite ways in different places because of the ambiguity of that language. But essentially, after all the dust settles, or while it's settling, what emerges is somewhat of a disconnect between these sources. That until now, we've been pretty confident that we're not allowed to misrepresent for the purpose of tzedaka. And yet here, the impression the Gemara seems to suggest is that this misrepresentation, at least without being overt, at least without saying anything, at least a passive misrepresentation or a implicit misrepresentation, is perhaps permitted. And why should that be? And this is the subject of much analysis. And there are some who suggest that maybe the whole difference is the Gemara in Sukkah involved the neder issue, that was the problem, and it comes back to that. Or there are some who suggest that it had to do specifically with Rav Yannai's Gabbai Tzedakah role, and that maybe this goes back to the era where there was kfiya in tzedaka, where it was possible to compel, that there were direct tzedaka obligations, that the Gabbai Tzedaka was empowered to coerce, and therefore maybe this is an acceptable method of coercion, that if you're able to come with sticks and physically force people to give tzedakah, so then maybe a little misrepresentation is no worse than that, although it's not an obvious point. And that's a topic of discussion, and there's a tshuva in the Shevet Halevi where he takes up this issue, that if we want to determine that there is some degree of obligatory tzedakah, would it be permissible to misrepresent in order to extract that obligatory tzedakah? And that tshuva got a lot of controversy, and there were those who were very upset with the thought. Bari HaShulchan and others wrote, how could it be you could even think of such a thing? And there's a lot of debate that all circles around this source and around the apparent contradiction in the Beis Yosef and the whole discussion. So if I may, I think it could suggest a resolution that would perhaps make everything fall into place. And I think it goes to the issue of what exactly is being represented or misrepresented here. That, in essence, what is the message that Rav Yanai is trying to transmit? So, in the case that we've talked about so far, what kind of potential misrepresentations are we talking about? So, we know that to misrepresent one cause for another, that's for sure off limits. That's for sure egregious. To switch one cause for a more popular cause, no question, that's absolute gezel. That everyone agrees, even though Vosner talks about that in the Tshuva and others were shocked at the thought, but that the consensus is for sure unacceptable. And even to puff up a cause by saying a lot of people are donating, so that also would seem to be gneivas das. But what's the issue that's possibly being misrepresented here in the case of Rav Yanai? So Rav Yanai is not misrepresenting a cause, nor is he claiming that one cause is more popular than the other. All he's doing is conveying the message that the aniyim are out there and they need money. That's always true. They're never going to run out of aniyim. It's just that when people see a full tzedakah box, so then they tend to tell themselves, okay, I don't have to worry about it right now. The aniyim are all okay. There's enough tzedakah out there, I can forget about it. And that's the misrepresentation, because there are always aniyim. There's always going to be more of a need for tzedakah. So when people see a full tzedakah box and they use that to lull themselves into a false sense of security, so that's a problem. So it helps the cause when the tzedakah box is a little bit lower and people can't fool themselves into thinking that the aniyim are all taken care of. But that's not a misrepresentation. That just restores things to equilibrium. And there, the difference between spoken and unspoken is not just a matter of degree. That's everything. Because if he had said something explicitly and said, oh, we're low this month, it's not just a question of whether that would be a greater misrepresentation or a greater sheker because it was overt. Okay, that would be an actual misrepresentation. That would be actually saying something. But the fact that he took the money out of the box so people couldn't look at a full box and say, oh, I can forget about it for now. I don't have to worry about tzedakah because I see a full charity box there. So that wasn't misrepresentational at all. It's not just that it was implicit versus overt. It actually just neutralized a possible misrepresentation. And I think that that's probably the point, that therefore it actually reduces the misrepresentation to nothing and just brings things back to a baseline. And that's probably why it's ultimately okay. And what that leaves us with is essentially no misrepresentation at all. And then the resolution of all our sources is that when it comes to misrepresentation, we're actually left with no permitted representation, misrepresentation. We can't misrepresent the cause itself for a more popular cause, that's for sure. We can't claim that the actual cause is itself more popular than it is. That's the problem of Gneivas Das. Or any other way of making the cause and look into something that it isn't, all of these are going to be highly problematic. Now, there are a few other applications we'll try to see if we have time for, but I'll just mention here as a application. It's a question I was once asked, halacha lemaisa, a practical question, a real-life question was once asked by a charitable organization that had the policy, as many organizations do, when they had their dinner or they had their journal, so they would rank all the donors in different levels, and they had their silver donors and their gold donors and their diamond donors and their super mega platinum donors, however it was done. And there was one donor who every year was always on the super mega platinum. And that year, he came to them and he said, listen, for the past many years, I've been at the highest level. But this year, I had a bad year in the market, and I'm not able to donate the way I usually do. Hopefully, next year I'll be back, but this year I'm not able to do what I've normally done. But I'm requesting of you that I should still be listed on that top level. So would you please do that for me as a favor? So the organization asked, what should they do? Can they still list him? So the issue is potentially Gnevis Das from both sides. Right? It's potentially Gnevis Das from the donor, that he's asking for public credit, that he is donating at a level that he actually is not donating on. And it's Gnevis Das from the organization, that they are claiming that they're getting this donation, and in reality, they're not getting it. So, based on everything that we've heard so far, are they allowed to do this? So, I told them that they are allowed to do this. So, why? Why are they allowed to do this? That's the opposite of everything we just said so far. So, the reason I thought they're allowed to do it is because, if you think about it in this case, so what are the problems? So here, yes, there's an issue that maybe this individual could look like he's trying to get credit to be the kind of donor who gives at that level. But the thing is, he is the kind of donor who gives at that level. Every other year, he's been giving at that level. And if he were able to, he would also give this year, but he's just not able to. But he's proven in all the previous years that he is that kind of person. And the organization is risking a false impression that they're the kind of organization that gets donations at that level. But they are the kind of organization that gets donations at that level. Every other year, they have been getting it. And if this person was still at his former income level, he'd also be giving this year that donation. So it's not a significant misrepresentation on either part, that he's not misrepresenting his generosity and they're not misrepresenting their appeal. Now, why does he want to stay on that level? Because he's embarrassed he's having a bad year. Now, there is a din in the Torah of day machsora, that when somebody is having a financial downfall, so the Torah says we have to help them, we have to help them to the standard they were accustomed to. And we have to help them according to their need. And the Gemara in Ksuba says that means even if it was a very high standard that they were used to, we have to try to keep them at that high standard. Which seems to be very striking, because the examples the Gemara gives seem to be very extreme. And it's hard to understand why that should be. And there are some who explain, some of the Rishonim explain, that actually it's not meant to be like that forever. But we're talking specifically about somebody who is having a financial downturn and they don't want the public to know. It's embarrassing for them. So therefore, in order to save them that embarrassment, so we help them maintain the standard so it shouldn't be a public problem for them. So you can see from there that that's also a halachic value. To help somebody not have to be embarrassed when they're having a bad year is apparently something the halacha endorses. So you put all that together, that this wasn't a significant misrepresentation for the donor. He normally does give this much. It wasn't a significant misrepresentation for the organization. They normally do get this much. And it's for a motive that the halacha recognizes, to try to save him from that kind of embarrassment. So put all that together, I think it actually was justified to keep him on that high standard, at least temporarily, in order to address that issue under those circumstances. But were it to be that this actually was a misrepresentation of his generosity or a misrepresentation of the appeal of the tzedakah, so then that would bring us back to the problem. If this was there in order to try to elicit donations under false pretenses, by claiming that tzedakah was more attractive than it actually is, so then that would be a significant problem. And that's what we see from these sources. That's what we seem to be
emerging with as a consensus among the poskim and as the sources are telling us. Now, what's interesting is there could be other types of misrepresentations which don't go to cause any harm and are justifiable because they do serve purposes that are necessary and proper. So, for example, the Yerushalmi, which some of the sources are here, some of them will tell you outside, and we're about to run out of time, but the Yerushalmi discusses that there were certain Talmidei Chachamim and other tzaddikim who would collect for tzedakah, and they weren't actually as needy as they made themselves out to be. But they were actually collecting for many other people who were embarrassed to be collecting for themselves, so they would do the collecting, and then they would give out what they collected to all these other needy people. And apparently that's okay. Apparently the fact that they made it look like they were collecting for themselves and they were really collecting for other people was justifiable because it was done to protect those people from shame. So here it's interesting. We have to be very, very focused on what the motive is. If the motive is to actually help Aniyim, and the only reason it's being done with this deceptive purpose is because those people are too embarrassed to do it for themselves, so then that might be justifiable. I remember when I was learning in Israel many years ago, I don't know if he's still there, but I remember when I was learning in Karabiavna, so there used to be a collector in Mea Sharim who was known as Super Schnarr. I don't know if he's still around, but at first I was a little skeptical of somebody who was known as Super Schnarr, and then that people told me that he was actually supporting a whole household full of poor people who would be supported by his very aggressive collecting throughout the day, and then I became much more sympathetic to him. And indeed, this seems to be what this Talmud Yerushalmi is talking about, that there were people who would essentially front all of the collecting, and if indeed they are giving out to Aniyim who are not able to collect for themselves, so then theoretically that should be legitimate. But as the poskim point out, and Reb Chaim Kanievsky, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, wrote a sefer on Hilchos Matnas Aniyim, Derech Hamuna, so he talks about this at length, that you have to make sure you can figure out exactly why it is that the people aren't collecting themselves. Is it a concern? If there is a concern that donors would only give to this collector because he's a Talmid Chacham and they want to support him, but they wouldn't necessarily be supporting the other people who he's collecting for, so then that would be a problem. You know, how exactly can we read everyone's mind to know exactly who they go for? So that becomes increasingly complicated, but again, it highlights just how precise we're trying to be. We're trying to maximize the benefit to the idea, and we're trying to maximize the goal of tzedakah, while also make sure that we're not taking 1 cent under false pretenses, that we're not taking anything that wouldn't otherwise be given. It's something that itself is very, very tricky. Now, it's also emphasized that this desire for honesty shouldn't stop us from helping people who are needy and who aren't willing to receive. So that's another Yerushalmi, source 7. Here, just to say very quickly, we're about to run out of time. So, Amar Rav Yonah, Ashrei Nosin Ladal. So here, this idea that fortunate is somebody who gives to the poor. And of course, Pasuk Ashrei Maskil Ladal. So what does it mean to be insightful when you give to somebody who is poor, somebody who's thoughtful and figures out how to give? And the Gemara goes on to talk about Roa ben Tovim Shiyari ben Chasif. So you see somebody who used to be wealthy, and now he is no longer as wealthy. I hear that you have an inheritance coming to you. Tov akareya min dehavanasivle. I'm like, so here, take from what I'm going to give you, and you'll pay me back later from what's coming to you. So we're almost 1 minute at a time, so we'll just wrap up. But the point is that if you need to deceive a recipient in order to convince him that he should take when he would otherwise be hesitant to take, so then there's much more license to do that, that is in the service of saving him embarrassment and doesn't have any victims. And the Gemara tells us in last week's Daf Yomi, those who are holding in Daf Yomi, that Mutter Lashanos B'dvar Shalom, that we're allowed to be less than perfectly honest when it is in the service of Shalom, when it is there to save somebody's hurt feelings. So that we're allowed to do. But the poskim also point out, and there are different opinions about this, that there we also have to worry about Gnevas Das. So for example, if I'm in charge of a fund
and I want to give somebody from that fund, but he doesn't want to take from tzedakah, so I pretend it's a gift for me. So that, on the one hand, may make him more ready to take it, but it may also make him more grateful to me. He thinks I'm giving out of my pocket. So then if he's going to be more grateful to me, that's the Gnevus Das problem. Some poskim were more worried about that than others. On the surface, that is a problem. If it's the only way to get him to receive, so then you have to figure out whether it outweighs the problem of the Gnevus Das, but that's also a reflection of that issue. So there are many very careful balances that we have to try to strike as far as making sure that we're accomplishing all of our goals. And I'll just end by mentioning one idea, and there's a lot more to say about this, but it's very noteworthy that when it comes to the korbanos, and it's a related idea, that when it comes to the korbanos, so there are a lot of halachos about korbanos, and one of the very first halachos that are derived in Hilchos Korbanos, the very beginning of Sefer Vayikra, there's a drasha on the very first pasuk, Adam ki akriv, that when a person should give, the language of Adam, so Chazal understand that just like Adam Harishon, that when he brought korbanos, there was no gezel involved, because everything was his, there was nobody to compete with, so too, korbanos cannot be brought from gezel. That's pretty much the first halacha that we learn about in Hilchos Korbanos, that they can't be stolen. And we know that in general we have a halacha that mitzvah hababi avera is not accepted, that we can't do mitzvos through illegitimate means. But it seems that when it comes to korbanos, it's about something more. It's not simply an idea of mitzvah hababi avera, but there's something more to it. And if you think about it, the idea of stealing for a korban is particularly contradictory, because it shows that you don't understand what the whole concept is. Because what's the mentality of somebody who would steal to give a korban? The only way that would make sense is if you think the idea of a korban is that God is hungry and he needs the meat and he's starving, he really needs this meat, so he'll be happy even if I have to steal to get it to him. But if we understand that God does not need to eat the meat, and this is supposed to be a mitzvah that represents my devotion, so then the notion of stealing it in order to give it makes no sense. The idea that I could think that there'd be some value in stealing a korban and giving it to God shows I don't understand what the whole concept of korbanos is about. It's not just a mitzvah havabi aveira, it's a defect in the whole concept. And so too, when it comes to tzedakah, if I would think that I have to use underhanded means in order to raise money for tzedakah, that I should steal or I should lie or misrepresent in order to give tzedakah, so that it shows I don't understand what the whole notion is. It's if I'm thinking that God can't really run his world without my help, he can't really sustain the poor people or the yeshivas without my help, and he needs me to somehow get him the money, however I do it, by hook or by crook, by any illegitimate means, that's what I've got to do in order to help him run the world. But if I understand that God runs the world completely, and he could make everything work on his own without me if he wanted to, and he's giving me an opportunity to partner, then I would understand there's no role for such deception.